Welcome. Welcome to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
Avi. So a big...
Friday Eve, as I call
Friday,
it.
Friday. I like that. I like that. We're almost at the weekend. So today we're talking about the funding cuts and mass layoffs that have been happening across the federal government. I've seen it on all my social media feeds. Lots of people have been impacted. Lots of people are worried. President Donald Trump and Elon Musk, Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, they've frozen billions in federal funds. It's affecting education, health and medical research, environmental programs. Tens of thousands of workers have been fired, including some in Pennsylvania. And so we're going to peel back the layers. We're going to talk about the impact of this. So much is happening right now. So today we have a Republican and a Democrat who will help us parse through some of this local impact, what it could mean for everyday folks, the resistance or the pushback we're seeing on both sides of the aisle, and what we could possibly expect going forward as we talk about cutting government or the bloat that has been alleged exists. So our question for you, our listeners today, is, are you feeling the effects of these budget cuts? Are you worried that you might be next, or maybe even the services that you rely on from the federal government? Or do you believe it is time to trim some of the excess spending? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, hi, Studio Tubers, drop your question or comment in the chat.
Yeah, and this has been a slow drip. Well, maybe slow is the wrong way to put it.
Yeah, because it's been less than a month. Tomorrow is one month.
There's been news about this almost every single day, mm-hmm. including this morning. Mm-hmm. News about layoffs at the IRS and some other agencies. So yeah. There's something about this every day. At some point, we knew we were going to stop and talk about it in depth. Happy to do that today. Would love to hear from you.
Yeah.
888-477-9499. Yes, we can talk about the individual cuts. We can talk about the individual policies. But we can also talk about the broader issue of, is the federal government too big? And if it were to be reduced, how should it be reduced?
Yeah. Does it need to be this fast? Should it be slower? People might have mixed thoughts on this.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Studio2@whyy.org is the email. And again, YouTube, drop those comments in the live chat. And now, a trio of local news stories, yep. Cherry Gregg. Mm-hmm. And the first story, I have to say I'm tempted to take a little bit of a victory lap, because I brought this issue up on the show
about a year ago.
And mm-hmm. I got some pushback when I brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
I said that it felt like Philadelphia's preparations for the 250th anniversary of the nation's birth in 2026, summer of 2026, felt a little bit light mm-hmm. compared to what we've seen in the past, like in 1976, 1926, and 1876.
Yeah.
And there was a whole big story in the Inquirer today about just that topic and investigating perhaps why there seems to be fewer transformational projects associated mm-hmm. with the 250th anniversary celebration, because historically Philadelphia really has been the place
it has
for these big birthday bashes for America, the 100th, the 150th, the 200th, 250th. There are some big events coming to Philadelphia, including mm-hmm. like All-Star Games and the like, the World Cup. But in terms of big projects, Not
so
a lot cooking. So mm-hmm. this story dove into why mm-hmm. and what it means, because now Boston might be taking the lead on the 250th.
Yeah, I remember when we talked about this and we got the email from the president of the Philadelphia 250 organization.
Was it an email? I didn't remember.
We got an email and they were like, we're here. We've been doing work. And but it wasn't a lot of talk about it. And we actually brought them on the show.
Sure.
Segment. Yeah, we did a whole segment with them
fair.
Talking about this. Yeah. But, it is interesting. We are going to be spending tens of millions of dollars on the festivities around the 250th. I think the state has about $60 million plus dollars dedicated to this. The city is dedicating or proposing about another $40 million, a lot for security. But you're right. There's no major, we got the Ben Franklin Bridge at one of these big celebrations. That was unveiled. We aren't getting anything big like that.
And even 50 years ago, which was considered kind of like a whimper compared mm-hmm. to the past ones, The Mann Center. Yeah. You ever gone to the Mann Center?
It's wonderful.
That was built around the Bicentennial. Mm-hmm. The African American Museum, Bicentennial. The new, where you go to see the Liberty Bell.
Yeah.
That was built for the Bicentennial. So, you know, these have progressively gotten smaller and less successful. And I'm not saying that money should have been spent on this. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's better ways to spend that money. I do think, as the story points out, COVID's a huge part of this.
Yeah.
Because there were plans dating back more than a decade to make this a bigger thing. And then COVID happens and all of the resources and the attention, rightfully so,
shifted. Yeah. And I will say that, you know, they had in the Inquirer article, they had quotes from former Visit Philly executive Michael Numis, who heads the planning for the for this 250th celebration. He says they have been working on this. You know, 2026 is a priority in this administration, and that it will be a big deal putting Philadelphia on a global stage.
Oh, yeah. You can still have a big party. It's a matter of the lasting impact, right? Because these were big legacy projects that changed the city.
It did. And it doesn't seem like we have that kind of a project pending right now.
Let's stay in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Story number two.
Well, local reporting and social media posts about alleged harassment directed at Chubby Chicks, a cafe in Center City, has sparked some unexpected backlash against neighboring businesses. Let me explain what happened. Over the weekend, So over the weekend, social media influencers told the story of business owner Shakira Turner, who alleged that neighbors were bullying her since she opened Chubby Chicks a couple of months ago. She claimed someone put a dead rodent in front of her establishment. They flooded the building's basement. And she said she even had a one-on-one confrontation with someone, implying that she and her business did not belong in that neighborhood. Well,
11th and Walnut,
yeah, 11th and Walnut, yeah. And by the way, Fox 29 picked up the story Monday, and it went viral. I mean, I had people from out of state.
Me too.
Other cities emailing me about this story. People started flooding Chubby Chicks with support, thanks to more social media influencers who picked up the story. But what happened was folks also started to write negative reviews of neighboring businesses. I'll note that initial reporting on this story did not specify who the neighbors were that were
complaining.
And so folks just started putting horrible Yelp reviews about the businesses that were surrounding the area. So Turner, the business owner from Chubby Chicks, took to social media asking people to not leave bad reviews for those negative businesses and to actually go in and change the reviews. Take a look at what she had to say.
I just wanted to come on here really quick and make a little message. Please, please, please don't harm the other businesses. Hilo Taco, Scoop DeVille, they have nothing to do with what's going on. Like, nothing whatsoever. Those businesses support us. We support them. Please don't harm them.
Yeah. And so this kind of went on and on. And so other media outlets jumped on this as well. And Action News, our news partner, 6ABC, had reached out to the Condo Association for a response. And their lawyer issued a statement that said the association has not been privy to specific interactions between the restaurant and neighborhood residents. However, he said there have been unsubstantiated reports that harassment is taking place on all sides. The association condemns any such behavior and supports legal action against the perpetrators. But this story shows how things can get out of hand and there be collateral damage.
A couple comments. First, Chubby Chicks and Scoop DeVille, by the way, are great names for a restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
So kudos to them for that. I feel like there is... If I was just approaching this story for the first time, which I'm not, but if I was, I would be confused about why this sparked such outrage, because it did spark national outrage. Can you explain that a little bit? This is a sort of like little neighborhood tiff between a new business and the people that live around the business.
And by the way, the owner of Chubby Chicks is a Black woman, and I'll be specific about that. And so people felt like it was racial discrimination. And to be clear, if you couldn't tell from the, I guess if you're not watching the YouTube channel, and so people sort of like flooded to help her because they felt like she was being targeted because of her race. And so, and just so you know, this area, 11th and Walnut, has all different types of businesses there. And so that's why I think people flooded in and said, you know, we want to help her because they felt like she was being targeted as a Black business owner.
All right. Story number three now, real quick, because we didn't do it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't we do this story yesterday? I don't even know.
I don't know.
Sometimes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's a chaotic morning.
It happens.
Story number three, you might have heard yesterday, the SS United States, the most famous ship that's no longer in Philadelphia, is no longer in Philadelphia. This was the famous ocean liner that set a world record for how fast it got from Europe to America, and then just sort of sat in Philadelphia for a long, long time with all these grand plans to revive it. They never came to fruition, and finally, a local government, a county government down in Florida, bought the thing to sink it and turn it into a reef for snorkelers and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So the ship finally left its longtime home in Philadelphia.
Bye
goodbye
bye.
To the SS United States. You sound a little too gleeful with that bye-bye.
Well, you know, we've been talking about this for over a year.
Are you gleeful?
No, I'm just saying that they said it was going to go, then it wasn't going to go, then it was going back and forth, and now they're finally gone. I will say that, you know, I've lived in Philadelphia the entire time that I've been here. That ship has been there.
Yeah, me too.
So I don't even know what it's going to feel like down there without the ship.
I think it'll feel like there's no ship. Yeah,
yeah,
I think more
but
or
it's
less.
Such a part of the you know, the waterfront.
It is. So it's gone. A lot of people were sad to see it go. By the way, if you're still invested in this story,
yes.
You can track the ship via GPS, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So you can track this thing's journey that we
there
have
it
on the YouTube channel all the way. It's past the Delaware Bay. Now it's into the big, bold Atlantic Ocean and on its way to the Gulf Coast of Florida.
Yeah. And by the way, right now I just tracked it. It's just south of Ocean City, Maryland. So the track there, it's going. I mean, you
ever,
probably
you
drive
been
there.
To Ocean City, Maryland?
I have, as a, you know, a Marylander. Yep. We used to go there in the summer. Yeah.
Well,
how about you?
Yes.
Yes.
I got some stories for off air about Ocean City, Maryland.
Ooh. you might need a martini for that.
That's neither here nor there. Here and there today is our discussion about Donald Trump's attempts to trim the federal government. You
yes.
might even say slash. We want to hear your opinions about all of this. Give us a call, 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. President Trump has moved fast to attack what he's called waste, fraud, and abuse in government. With the help of Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, they're poised to slash more than 200,000 people from the federal workforce, hitting dozens of agencies, including the Department of Education, Homeland Security, USAID, Agriculture, the EPA, Veterans Affairs, and more. Now, Fox News host Sean Hannity interviewed Trump and Musk together on Tuesday night. Take a listen.
Look, what all we're really trying to do here is restore the will of the people through the president. And what we're finding is that there's an unelected bureaucracy. Speaking of unelected, there's a vast federal bureaucracy that is implacably opposed to the president and the cabinet.
Now, locally, billions of federal dollars that go to our states have also been frozen. Delaware, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania have all filed suits over those suspended funds. There are NIH cuts threatening medical research at our local universities, and tens of thousands of federal workers that live in the tri-state region are at risk. Some of them gathered at a protest on Independence Mall yesterday to rally in support of their colleagues who've already been laid off.
Emperor Donald Trump and his cronies in Doge, Elon Musk, who are cutting jobs, destroying livelihoods, and cutting our services to the bone.
Through this kind of wanton slashing with no thought or sort of logic to it, these people have their livelihood stripped away from them, and these are extremely dedicated, extremely intelligent people that contribute a lot more than they take.
Our department saw tons of incredible, qualified folks let go, and it's been really discouraging to see. scary, helpless.
Now, are these cuts a long overdue belt tightening for a bloated government, or is this mistargeted overreach that's slashing crucial programs? We have two guests joining us today. Across from me in our Philadelphia studio is State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta. He represents the 181st District, and he is a vice chair for the Democratic National Committee. Malcolm Kenyatta, welcome to Studio 2.
Happy to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us, and also joining us by Zoom is Farah Jimenez. She's a Republican political commentator who writes for Broad and Liberty and Politics PA. Hey, Farah, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me again.
Our question to listeners and viewers today: are you feeling the effects of these cuts? Are you worried you might be next? Or do you believe it's time to trim some of the spending? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org, or hey, if you're watching on WHYY's YouTube channel, drop your comments right there in the live chat.
So President Trump has said these cuts are about rooting out waste. Critics have called it a ideological purge that guts essential programs. I want to get each of your reactions to these sweeping cuts and firings and your take on what you think is really driving these decisions. Malcolm, we'll start with you.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And I think we need to level set. The funds that we're talking about, the jobs that we're talking about, this is not the typical budgetary debate that we have that I'm going to engage in Harrisburg. What the president is doing is illegal. It's illegal what he is doing. And it's critical that we repeat that over and over again. This is not a political debate. These are funds that have already been appropriated by Congress. And so I would refer everybody to the Constitution, which makes very clear that Congress has the responsibility and oversight as it relates to spending. And we have, as it was so ironic, listening to an unelected billionaire from South Africa talk about unelected bureaucrats when he himself was not elected by anybody to do anything and is walking around our federal government with people who, there was a hearing just yesterday where Tom Struzzi from New York, a congressman, was asking very simple questions about whether or not individuals who are in critical government infrastructure that protects and houses your Social Security number, your medical information, whether or not these people had gone through an FBI vetting, whether or not these people had ever had to fill out the paperwork that you have to fill out when you get appointed to anything in the federal government, particularly at the level of access that they have tried to have for themselves. And none of the folks who testified had any clue of who these people were, of what their backgrounds were, and of whether or not basic security clearance protocol was followed. So we're talking about, so we can understand, I wanted to level set there.
Yeah.
But when we talk about the things that are being cut and the jobs that are being reduced, we're talking about people who inspect our food to keep it safe so that we're not poisoned, and so you're not poisoning your child when you're sitting them down for dinner. We're talking about people who are doing air traffic control. Just in the last 3 weeks, we've seen how many commercial airlines have catastrophic near misses and in some instances horrific disasters like the one that we saw right in D.C. We're talking about people that are doing research on things like childhood cancer and have led to incredible breakthroughs. And so if the president, if members of Congress want to cut spending, that's a fair conversation to have always. Mm-hmm. But what he's doing right now is illegal, and this is not Malcolm's opinion. This is multiple federal judges.
And we're going to get into that and some of the resistance to this and how to deal with that. I want to get your take, Farah, your reaction to these cuts, but also your thoughts on the logic behind it.
Well, I think there's an open question about the legality of these cuts or the approach that's being used by DOJ. But just like Representative Kenyatta, I would like to do some level setting as well. So one of the things that I think most Americans probably are not as aware of is this idea of government efficiency dates back to 1921, when William Harding established the Government Accountability Office, or at least I should say the legislature at the time established that office. And it's a presidential appointed leadership team but they sit in the legislative office, and their intention is to identify where there's fraud or opportunities for efficiency. So this goes back almost more than 100 years, that there's always been an attempt to examine how can we do better in terms of stewarding the tax dollars that we're given at the federal level. More contemporary is under Bill Clinton, when Al Gore, when he was a sitting vice president, ran a program called the National Partnership for Reinventing Government. And the idea there was also looking at government efficiency. They slashed 200,000 jobs from the federal government. They claimed to have saved a couple of billion dollars, and they consolidated 80 government agencies. That's a lot, but when you consider the fact that today we're employing 3 million federal workers, and we're also have a budget, not a budget deficit, but rather a national debt burden that approximates $36 million and is basically costing every American taxpayer $100,000 on their back of debt that they carry, it becomes a national security issue if we're unwilling to really examine how our funds are being stewarded and whether or not there are opportunities to cut. The biggest places to cut will always be entitlement spending. But that's the third rail of politics. Who
That's
is
what I was
going
going
to
to ask
decide
you.
to cut? Yeah,
That's what I was going to ask you,
that's
Farah,
the
because
best place to cut. But you're not going to touch that, or you're going to avoid it as best as possible because it's a place that people really rely on that. They count on the Social Security payments or SSI payments or disability payments. Those things are critical. So that is not part of what's being examined. That's part of the Department of Government efficiency.
well, let me ask you,
I
though,
do,
on that point, though, because we do have a lot of callers and comments, and I want to start getting them in. But
Please.
if all this does is eliminate some jobs from the federal bureaucracy, whether they should have been eliminated or not, if you're a deficit hawk, I just wonder how much that even accomplishes. Because as you rightly point out, there has been a rise in non-defense spending as a percentage of GDP over the last 20 some years. But much of that is driven by Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, you mentioned SSI. So if even if you do that, and let's say you do it in a good way, does it actually address the problem that conservatives have raised consistently over the last few decades, that the federal deficit is out of control? Or are you kind of just spinning your wheels in the mud here?
Well, I don't think it's an issue that's only been raised by conservatives. Any economist on the right or the left should be arguing that there is reason to be concerned from a national security perspective, because who is carrying our debt? And in some instances, it's our national enemies. China carries a significant burden of our debt, and so we have reasons to be concerned. I do agree that the If you really want to get at the national debt burden, you're going to have to deal with the entitlements. But Representative
Well,
Kenyatta can probably explain the political consequences
No, it's
of
not about.
suggesting that approach.
No, fair. I appreciate a lot of what you said, but I think, again, I'm going to constantly challenge this frame. This is not about cutting government spending. At the same time, we're having this conversation about the indiscriminate firing of critical federal workers, some of whom worked on our nuclear facilities, who were quote unquote fired by an accident, as an accident.
Sure.
This is rampant incompetence. Some of whom
So
were
what is the
literally
end?
working, hold on, some
What
of
is the end?
whom, some of whom, Avi, as well, because this is so important for people to understand. Some of the people who were also fired indiscriminately were literally working on containing the bird flu, which is destroying the livelihoods of so many of our small farmers all across Pennsylvania. Our number one industry is agriculture. So if you want to cut government spending, one of the things you might not want to do is give a $400 million no-bid contract to the guy who's supposed to be cutting government spending. I mean, Elon Musk, the Department of
Talking about the
Defense.
armored
Yeah,
cyber
the
charge.
armored
But let me.
Teslas. They also are proposing right now, Avi, and I apologize for interrupting, but they're also proposing $4.6 trillion tax cuts. And so you can't tell me that we should be celebrating $55 billion of quote unquote savings while also advocating for increasing the federal debt by $4.6 trillion.
But the reason I want to get in here, I think you guys actually agree on this point, which is that if you just cut federal jobs, if that's all you end up
That's
doing
not
is looking
enough.
for efficiencies in the federal bureaucracy, that ultimately it's a drop in the bucket in terms of the national debt. So if that's not what's driving it, Representative Kenyatta, what do you think is driving what we're seeing right now?
None of this is really complex. And Donald Trump is not a deeply complicated person to understand. He wants to cut the things that we need, that working families need, so that he can fund tax cuts for billionaires. If you look at his first time in office, the only thing that he accomplished of deep substance was the 2017 tax credit and Jobs Act, but there were no jobs. There were just a bunch of tax credits. And not, again, that's not Malcolm's opinion. Independent economists looked at this and said that it cost us trillions of dollars without providing any real offset in terms of savings or economic growth. Right now, as a part of the budget reconciliation, there is a proposal. We talked about the third rail of politics, but it is being crossed. There's a proposal right now by Republicans in Congress to cut $830 million from Medicare and Medicaid programs. Yeah. And there's a lie on social media that $2.7 trillion of Medicare spending is going internationally or just some things. If you, unfortunately, I look at the dark, crazy parts of the internet so people don't have to. And so I think in general, what makes this so frustrating to people who want to be serious about making government work more efficient is that is a genuine conversation to have. That is not what
you're
is happening.
That's not
right
what's
now
happening right now.
And okay. I'm just going to bring in a caller. We have Leah from Northeast Philadelphia, who just is one of the people who was let go from the federal government. Leah, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, so thanks for taking the call. I have a comment and a question. So my comment, first of all, is I was just terminated today from the IRS. And, you know, my job was created as part of a congressional order to restaff and increase the budget of the IRS so that we can do our job and we can, you know, get better at tax collection, which, if you're talking about budget and deficit, is, you know, a critical, you know, matter of federal jobs and federal employment and federal function. But my job was terminated by executive order. So one thing we're talking about is whether or not we need to shrink the size of the government. That's one question. But then the second question is, what about the checks and balances? Why is my job being cut by executive order when Congress deemed it necessary only 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem that there's any rhyme or reason or process to any of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's being done haphazardly. My manager didn't know what day we were going to get terminated. She found out we were terminated when we got the email and she was copied.
Wow. Thank you so much. That's Leah from Northeast Philly. I want to give out our number again. Are you feeling the effects of these budget cuts? Are you worried you might be next or the services that you rely on from our federal government may be next? Or do you believe it is time to trim some of the excess spending? Our number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. You can leave comments in the chat on our YouTube channel. And I just want to read a couple of these in so you guys hear what our listeners are talking about. We have Sean who says, when it comes to the DOGE cuts, I think there is a parallel to the rise of the oligarchy in Russia. We are in an accelerating stage of oligarchs taking power in the USA. Lauren says, I'm a probationary employee with DOD. I am terribly worried that I may be illegally terminated at any moment. Rumors are swirling, many in denial, but the reality is it may happen. The fact is that the entire federal workforce accounts for 2% of the budget. Defense spending makes up 30% of the budget, many of which are Elon's contracts. And so, Farrah, I want to ask, and Malcolm, I want you to weigh in. Talk about the method of this. What is happening with the federal government cuts? People getting almost no notice. No one really knows what's happening. And you heard our caller just let go. Lots of confusion, lots of chaos. Even if there should be cuts, is this method wrong?
There are a lot of parallel themes, I think, when we're discussing DOGE and what's been happening. One we discussed, which is the frame that I offered up earlier, is are these cuts needed? Are cuts needed? And I think the universal argument I think the universal thought that people would have is that, yes, we absolutely do need to be thinking about reducing our national debt burden and instituting some cuts. But how do you do them without enacting pain? And the issue is there isn't really a way to do that. But the approach that I think the administration is currently employing is one that you more likely would see in the private sector and employed in the tech industry. And it has been employed by Elon Musk in all the businesses that he's taken over, which is to approach it with a wrecking ball, really create some disruption and see what shakes out. I don't think that is the optimal approach when you're dealing with government work because there's a complexity to the delivery of those services. I myself run a nonprofit, and you can imagine the level of anxiety that arises because while we may not be as impacted or as directly funded by government, many of the funding sources that we get are indirect recipients of federal dollars. And so there are downstream effects of the approach that these cuts have been taken. I think a lot about the young people who we serve who are applying for federal financial aid. The last 2 years have been an absolute disaster in the administration of FAFSA. So you have one more year now with a level of instability at the U.S. Department of Education. Maybe nothing happens to federal student aid, but that kind of anxiety that's being produced and arising for those employees, one could argue, would have a downstream effect in terms of the appropriation and the delivery of
Can
services
I
to
ask you
students.
something as
So,
a follow-up, Farah? You know, that
yeah.
you described Elon Musk's past behavior, and it really comes out of that Silicon Valley ethos,
Yeah.
move fast and break things. And you said you don't think it works for government. So why doesn't it work for government? But then what is the best way, if people agree that there should be cuts to the federal workforce, what's the best way to do that, in your opinion?
I think it doesn't work in the federal government because the interplay. A lot of government resources aren't expended just on those employees. They have to hire a lot of contractors. So, yes, we can take even a look at the $400 billion contract that Elon Musk has received from the federal government. It's because NASA itself cannot build some of the technology that it wishes to employ to deliver services in nationally and internationally. So it contracts that work out to get more efficient delivery of that innovation. So there's an argument for that. And I think that's part of the reason is that even when I look at some of the things that were cut in the U.S. Department of Education around research, that research was solid, valid, and actually informing efficiency and effectiveness of the investments being made by the federal government in education. Yes, you get rid of it, you save $1 billion. But there's possibility that there's a consequence
The
in terms of
downstream effects.
the downstream effect and
Yes.
the consequence of that, not just in the employees, but in the effectiveness of the dollars that you are deploying at any point. The challenge is that there is an interesting tension between Elon Musk, as I understand it, and Vivek Ramaswamy, who wanted to take different approaches to how to employ Doge. And so Musk, coming from Silicon Valley, has approached it with this wrecking ball kind of strategy, which I think is animating some of the base who get very excited about the fact that there's, I guess, if you look at Milei from Argentina, who was using the buzzsaw to say he's going to strip government, he's
Talking about
going to get rid
Javier
of
Milei.
things,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Javier Milei. I think people were really excited. Like it's fast and furious. You're going to feel the gains right away. But then the reality is there are also elected officials within the Republican government, with Republican Party. There are U.S. senators who at the same time are rejoicing, are then sending in their little slips to Doge and saying, please don't
Don't
cut the
cut
thing
X,
that
Y, and
matters
Z.
to
We'll
my.
put a pin in this and we'll talk further about the process. We'll talk about what the impact is locally and what the future looks like as these cuts continue on the other side of this break. We want to hear from you. Are you feeling the effects of these budget cuts and layoffs? Call us 888-477-9499. Studio 2 will be right back. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We are talking about the Trump administration's cuts to federal workers and federal aid. It's hitting education, medical research, veteran affairs, climate protections, humanitarian efforts abroad, and much more. So is this a much-needed right-sizing, or is it detrimental to critical programming?
Yeah, our guests today are Farah Jimenez, a Republican political commentator. We also have Malcolm Kenyatta, a Democratic Pennsylvania state representative for the 181st District and a Democratic National Committee vice chair. Our question for you, our listeners, is this. Are you feeling the effects of these budget cuts? Are you worried that you or services you receive might be next? Or do you believe that it's time to trim some of the excess spending? Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on our YouTube channel, be sure to drop your comments or questions in the chat. I want to read a couple of comments that we received. Rude comments. My husband is a federal employee, and the only thing holding the line for his position, including not forcing us to leave New Jersey and move to D.C. just so he can keep his job, is his union and his union contract. Steve comments, Congress hasn't done anything to cut spending in the last 4 years. So Steve feels like it's time to do something. And JTC1964X comments, they did not take the time to research both excellence and waste in government before making these cuts. There is no way they can make informed decisions on thousands of positions in this amount of time.
Kate comments something that echoes what you said earlier, Representative Kenyatta. This is all about taking money from programs that need it to fund tax breaks mm-hmm. and programs that help billionaires. But at the same time, we're saying that this is really not all that much money, even if you cut half the federal workforce. When you look at the federal budget, that doesn't really change the equation all that much. And a lot of our other commenters are saying this is not about money. Mm-hmm. This is about power. This is about taking people who might be in the way of a power grab and clearing them out. When I asked you what you think is behind that, Representative Kenyatta, that wasn't the explanation that you gave. So do you think that is part of the equation here?
No. So it was a part of a broader explanation. But as I said, I want to repeat this. This is not complex. This is about ripping away the critical services that our families depend on, all of your listeners right now, and giving the coffers and the authority of our government to the hands of a few billionaires that fund the campaigns of members of Congress. But I think you're right. These two things, to do that effectively and to do it in the sweeping way that you want to do, you have to neuter the current democratic system of checks and balances. And you do that by engaging in a bunch of criming. The president is committing a series of illegal and in some instances criminal actions that could be stopped and mitigated in some way if members of Congress actually grew a pair, gained a spine, and did their jobs. You know, we're in a situation right now. I was reading, I believe it was The Nation who wrote an article, or The Atlantic, mm-hmm. who wrote an article about members of Congress who are terrified because they believe that at any point, if they stand up to this president, that he will engage his loyal following and that people, and not in a political sense, but in a physical sense, will not be safe. That is not a worry or a concern that we should ever have in America.
So what should Democrats do president, as the minority party?
No, hold on. I think, yes, we can talk about what Democrats can do, but we need to not move the goalposts here. This is about what Republicans should do. Republicans is controlled, D.C. is controlled exclusively by Republicans. And if we want to stop some of the things that are happening, Republicans should stop talking to reporters like you on background and actually say publicly what they say to many of us privately, that this guy has gone too far, that he's dismantling.
They say that to you privately.
They say that all the time. All of them do.
And I want to talk about this.
But can I get to dive into that real quick?
Yeah.
So what do Republicans tell you?
So, I'll take it back to, I think, where you saw this really explode in the lead up to January 6th. After the 2020 election, the Republican refusal to say to Donald Trump at that moment that, sorry, you lost the election, mm-hmm. come back next time. Instead, they placated his anger and his vitriol and his refusal to accept that defeat. And what that did was lead to a bunch of armed people showing up to the Capitol, engaging in a direct assault on our system of government and on members of law enforcement. And what that did was calcify a fear that a lot of them already had, that they can never go, against what the president says. And it's why he puts out little memes on the official White House page declaring himself king. It's why he continues
to
hold...
Even local lawmakers feel that.
Of course they do.
Well, I want to ask this question as a follow up. I mean, because you're a lawyer, you know, Farah, and I want your thoughts on this. Should Republicans be stepping in? Because if you look at it, there are reports right now that Republicans are lobbying the president's cabinet to save their individual districts, to make sure that money continues to flow into their states. Should there be more coming from Congress on the Republican side since they are in control?
So I always love those kinds of stories because it reminds me of the time that I served on the School Reform Commission in Philadelphia, and every single member of City Council wrote a unified letter saying, absolutely, we should not be supporting a positive vote on any new charter schools. And then individually, every single one of them wrote a letter saying, can you vote supporting this particular charter in my neighborhood? So there, that level of hypocrisy is always present in politics, because in the end, there are values that you want to be viewed as supporting and sustaining at a national level, but you're also interested in protecting the needs and concerns of your district. So we're going to continue to see that hypocrisy. I don't see that changing at any level. But what I will tell you is, as a unified body of a unique coalition of individuals who ended up electing Donald Trump in a historic re-election, the narrative has to shift. And I would counsel Democrats to think about how to step away from the kind of old divisive language of suggesting that Donald Trump does not have the support from the electorate, because he does. He won in a historic way. That being said, it doesn't mean that everything that Donald Trump does is appropriate, is within the bounds of what we understand to be the way our separation of powers works. And I think there's legitimacy in some of those arguments. So we have the Impoundment Control Act, that what was a check on Nixon's attempt to unilaterally X out spends that had been made by the legislature. But I will tell you, subsequent to the Impoundment Control Act, almost every president subsequent to that, Republican and Democrat, has attempted to get rid of that because it doesn't allow them to make some decisions around how best to spend money. And since they're the oversight over the executive, there's an argument that legislature can appropriate, but at some point the executive should have some authority about making those decisions.
But that is a minority decision, though. That is, very few people think that it's legal for the president to be able to impound funds under that act. And so
I'm not disagreeing with that. I think that's absolutely the case. I think the Impoundment Control Act stands for itself, and the legislation is quite well written. There is a way to do that, apparently. I don't know. I'm told there's a bit of a workaround that has been employed in the past, but it's not efficient, and it probably requires some act of Congress. And that slows down. If you have a wrecking ball approach you're going to be using, a la Silicon Valley, you don't want to be slowed down. You want to go as fast as you possibly can. But I do think in the end, we are a nation of laws, and we do have to abide by them. And if it means things will be slowed down, they'll be slowed down. And my belief is that the legislature wants to maintain its own powers so that it continues to be a check on the executive and the judiciary, as our founding fathers intended all of our three systems of government to work.
But some people, based on the actions of Congress so far, say that actually the members of Congress don't really want that responsibility, that they're happy to basically let the executive do what it wants and they don't have to suffer the consequences. They just sort of fade into the background. You don't think that's the case?
No, I think legislature has been happy not to let the executive do what it wants, but rather to let the agencies do what they want. So what they've done is they've allocated in broad brush dollars to various federal agencies. And then the agencies themselves, through their leadership, have made some determinations about how to best to deploy those funds. And I think that's the argument that the Musk and the Donald Trump have against what I guess they call the deep state, is that there are individuals who are not elected, who are not appointed by those who are elected, who are making determinations on the deployment of those funds. And that, I think, is a cause of concern. So people who are as concerned about Elon Musk unelected making some unilateral decisions around spending, there are thousands of employees within the federal government who are doing very much the very same thing. And that should also be concerning.
But it sounds like
the legislature should be stepping up and doing its job.
That the legislature should, that Congress is not doing enough, that Congress is weak in this case, and they should be pulling the coattails of the president.
Yeah, I think, you know, Farah, I do want to thank you for a lot of the comments that you've made, frankly, because you have shown more willingness to engage rationally than most members of Congress. And we have to be able to have conversations across the political, I don't even want to call it divide, but across our country with people who have different ideas. But I want to underscore one of the things Farah was just talking about at the close of her comments. When we talk about individual federal agencies creating effectively regulation, first of all, I think we should talk about how that process happens. It's not a couple of people sitting in a room deciding. When a regulation, for example, a regulation that says you can't put mercury in our water, that was a big thing that came after the Clean Water Act, which was one of the acts that has been under assault by conservatives who have, Farah, I don't want to speak for you in terms of your view, but who have used legal arguments that at least touch on what Farah was saying in her close. What Congress has basically said with the Clean Water Act and many others is that I, as a member of Congress, I'm not an expert on water, right? But I am an expert on understanding that my constituents should be able to drink clean water.
Sure.
So what we're going to do is appropriate money to hire individuals who are specialists and understand, who have the expertise. And then those experts are going to come in and decide how that happens. But even that expertise is not deployed in a vacuum. Whenever a federal regulation comes down, it is a long, arduous process that includes multiple rounds of public comment, that includes multiple rounds of congressional and executive review. And what the president is doing is throwing all of that out to say, I alone should decide whether what the will of Congress is. That is illegal, and we should underscore that over and over and over again.
I want to read a couple comments. We have on YouTube, we have Yelena, who says, it's for the Republicans to step up if they agree this has gone too far. We're just hysterical Democrats with the sin of empathy, to which Judy says, well said, Yelena, these are babies in suits. Rodney says, it is not Trump's job to cut the federal budget. The Constitution gives Congress the power of the purse. Email from Judy, who says, the big bucks are in the Pentagon. The Pentagon budget is nearly $1 trillion a year. The Pentagon has never passed an audit. There are more lobbyists for military contractors than members of Congress.
100%. And I think, again, what this is about, the way that this is being done, is to see whether or not all of us collectively are going to accept the president doing whatever the heck he wants to do, and not about actually cutting our spending. We should be very clear. In the Biden administration, we cut the federal deficit by, I believe it was $1.8 trillion. How did he do that? He did it in part by having a corporate minimum tax by, and I apologize, I think it was Leah who called, who was fired from her job. He did it by increasing enforcement of the IRS to make sure folks like Elon Musk actually paid their taxes. Those are things that can help us reduce our deficit and cut spending.
Let me ask you, though, and I'll tee this up with an email from Matt, who says, I don't support the fast and careless way the government layoffs have occurred, but Matt also criticizes NPR and other stations for giving too much airtime to the people who have lost their jobs. He says, look, for those of us that work in the private sector, this is always a reality. You can lose your job, priority shift, etc. Just because you thought you had a safe government job doesn't mean you deserve extra empathy. And so a lot of folks in the public...
I'm going to support that, Avi, because I think it's one of the data points that many people don't realize is that the average tenure that a government and federal employee has on their job is 12 to 14 years. In the private sector, it's about 4 years. And so there is kind of a bargain, I think, that people make when they take a job at the federal government, that there's a sense of security. And this is a bit of shock and awe, too.
Like, you know, the person that runs Social Security makes $200,000 a year, and they're running a huge corporation, essentially.
That becomes a question mark, because that can also, a private sector can also include small businesses.
Well, a part of it is that we have expertise. A part of it is that we get expertise.
My only point is, and bringing that up, is that there's a bit of shock and awe that I think people are experiencing who work in the federal government, because this kind of approach is not one that is typically used within government systems.
Sure. But before, we do have to close, and I just want to make sure, Representative Kenyatta, you have a chance to answer this question I asked earlier, which is, what should Democrats do? Because you brought up this idea of we cannot accept this. So what does non-acceptance mean for a minority party that doesn't have control of any branch of government right now? Because I do think, if you look at the opinion polls, there is simmering discontent with what the Democrats have done or not done to this point.
Well, listen, I've shared that content. That's why I ran to be vice chair of the Democratic Party. I think that we have to do three things, what I call LME. First is, we have to litigate. I keep calling the president's actions illegal because they're illegal, and we cannot allow the Overton window to shift in the way that he wants. The second we have to do is mobilize. You saw it with people who were showing up all across this country to protest, members of Congress who are joining them. And then the final thing is elections. We have to win elections. But I also make the point that we lost the narrow election. The president won re-election, and like, that's historic, but the margin of his popular vote win was actually not that historic. It was modest by almost any measure. And so I think we have to do that locally and do it nationally, and that's what we're focused on at the
DNC. That's the final thought from Malcolm Kenyatta, Democratic Pennsylvania State Representative for the 181st District here in Philly and a DNC Vice Chair. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And Farah Jimenez, Republican political commentator at Broad and Liberty and elsewhere. Thank you so much, Farah, for your time.
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you to everybody who emailed in and commented online. We appreciate you, and to that caller, Leah. And also thank you to our producers, Debbie Bilder, Paige Murray Besser, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show with assistance from Adam Staniszewski. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett. Talk to you next week.